Welcome back to another episode of the Exterminatus Podcast, all things competitive in the world of Warhammer 40,000. My name's Eric, with me is my co-host Ray.
Hello.
Jim is out sick this week. We'll hope to hear him back next week for episode 200, major milestone in downloading podcasts and all that fun stuff. We're just happy to be still together, so very excited about that. But in the meantime, we had a lot of activity this past week. Let's talk about the new models that we saw. Ray, some more Black Templars have made their ways to the interwebs.
Yeah, so GW went ahead and started showing models coming out. One of the first ones they show is a new Black Templars lieutenant called the Castel. It's got a combi flamer, which is something we haven't seen for Primaris models yet, and a very medieval-looking power axe. They show him next to a drawing where basically that same model is pulled right off the picture. The next thing we see is...
Seems to be the new go-to thing.
Yeah, we first start with the Necron monolith and the new heavy locustus, and we're starting to see it more and more often.
I just wonder if the technology is now closer to they can do what they need to do, or what's going on. But yeah, it seems like they're touching, you know, some of the old treasures from the old artwork and bring them into plastic.
Hey, GW is going through kind of a retro phase. One of the sword brethren that they show has a combi plas and a power sword. Which, again, we're starting to see combi weapons for Primaris, which is, I don't know, I didn't think I'd actually see that. One of the model setups that I really liked, and I'm hoping that we can see more availability, different chapters, is there's one with a pair of, I'm guessing, are lightning claws, unless they're going to give them some. It's like the first time we saw lightning...
Crusader claws.
Yeah. The first time we saw something like lightning claws on a model was for the new Shrike, and I actually thought it was a really... That was a sculpt. I was kind of hoping that if we saw more stuff that we would actually see a unit that was kind of like that, but we haven't yet, so we'll see. And then another kind of out there model has a hand flamer and another medieval-looking power axe.
Keeping to their themes, so... One thing you told me that was really interesting, I think the way they did it, was the upgrade sprue, which, is this an upgraded upgrade sprue, or is this the same old upgrade sprue they had before?
This is a Black Templar's Primaris upgrade sprue, so I've never seen one like this. You know, they had the upgrade set for the Black Templars before, but it's got but 10 of one kind of shoulder pad, 6 for like the Gravis armor stuff, a couple of slightly different ones compared to basic 10. Got shotgun arms for neophytes, so you're going to have this like pseudo Primaris scout that they have. Got a 10 different head sculpts, 2 of which are helmets. They've got their own little transfer sheet, and the one thing they can put on repulsors that no one else can, a multi-melta.
Oh my.
Also, something that we've never actually seen before, they actually have bits for their relics.
Yeah, this part was pretty cool.
I've never seen them do something like this before. Really surprising, but, you know, it'd be kind of neat if they started doing that a little bit more often.
It just makes it a little easier to kind of, like, oh, this equates to that. And, like, it's always, they've had it for weapons. You know, you're like, kind of like, oh, okay, you know, this is... This weapon is this weapon's that. Sometimes you used to get it backwards, you know, get it wrong. But never seen it for relics, so I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah. One of the things that we see in the actual article, if one pulls their eyes away from the pictures long enough, is that they say they're going to be looking at the new rules throughout, which might mean we'll get it all on Friday.
Yeah, it's so far no new rules yet. Yeah.
Yeah. It looks like they've posted a how to paint battle ready Black Templars. And we know that their special edition box is on pre-order this next weekend, which I know is 125 pounds, and I believe it's going to come out to about 200 US.
Speaking of painting, seen a lot more of the Black Templars in different colors besides the normal black and white. Do you like the red that they keep splashing every so often?
Honestly, red is kind of one of those colors that gets used a little too often in the game, I think, along with black. So, I mean, it's just nothing special.
Right.
I wish we'd see more armies that were actual other colors. But, I mean, this is a well-established chapter that's kind of getting brought back to it. I know some people have been complaining since 6th edition when the Black Templars got rolled back into Codex Space Marines. So
it was kind of a big deal because you went from being the poster boys from the 3rd edition box set to you don't even get a Codex. So it's kind of like, huh. But I think overall, I kind of like the idea that the Space Marines as a whole, you know, you get a supplement. You know, you still, that way, you didn't have to worry about, like, if there's a new Space Marine release that, okay, does that apply to Dark Angels? Does that apply to Blood Angels? Does that apply to all the ones that have their own separate codex? So now it's a little easier to keep track of, but there's still a few weird, but why they didn't do that for the Chaos Legions, I'm still not sure. But
well, to be fair, as of right now, the Chaos Space Marines are still useless, so we don't in 9th edition for Chaos Space Marines yet. Now, in the case, true, in the case of like Death Guard and Thousand Sons, they're so point rolling them in because, I mean, they use a couple units between that actually like share, they're shared in the codexes. Whereas for Space Marines, I'd say about 90-95% of the models are shared throughout all the books. So it actually kind of, it kind of made sense to put them all into one and then to have some of their different chapters get put in their own supplements. I mean, I can understand the people who want to see their faction get some attention and not, like, almost constantly Space Marines. I mean, at the same time, you can only go so far before some of the stuff starts feeling a little left out. I don't remember if Black Templars were in the Imperial Fist supplement or not, but they have always been.
I believe they had gotten their own.
Okay. No, well, if they had gotten their own thing, it was a White Dwarf, 8th edition, because I know that the only supplements that came out in 8th edition, the Marines, I guess you'd call them the Founding Legions. So, White Scars, Imperial Fists, Ultramarines, Iron Hands. None of the second Foundings are after, actually. I know for a fact the Crimson Fists are in with the Imperial Fists. I just saw ours were. They may not have, if that's the case. Then I can kind of understand them having. I mean, when you want to, if you look at like the way that the Black Templars do things, it is very different from Space Marines. You know, they've got that whole Crusader Brethren thing, fights and the Acolytes or whatever the sort. So, I mean, again, they're like the Death Guard. They're very different from most of the other Marines in the makeup, and we're talking about an edition where a lot of the armies are being designed around what you see in the, you know, the fiction books. And, you know, the story behind it is affecting the actual game itself at this point.
Yeah. It's curious to see how that all comes together. But pulling all the stuff. You know, we'll see what's... seems like they're getting their own codex now, standalone. And we'll see what how they phrase it.
This is a supplement.
How they include things. Oh, it is a supplement. Yeah, I misread that completely.
Look at the picture right there. Black Templars right above a codex of supplement.
And see the fuzzy artwork on top. Okay, cool. All right, so it is a full supplement. Interesting. So, anyway, other news, there's a lot of rumors floating around from unofficial sources. So, I guess for next year regarding Chaos Space Marines and pretty much quite a few new sculpts coming around, including new Chosen, new Possessed, and they're trying to make them kind of a rebranding. And when you really think about it, a lot of stuff that came out in that one box set, like the new Obliterators and the Greater Possessed Champion and what, a couple other models, they never came out in a separate kit. So they were always in a box set. Oh, the new Havocs, that's what it was, with the different weapon options. So be curious to see what how much is true of this rumor and what will come out.
Yeah, I'm really excited to see, because a lot of the rumors and like other things have been kind of making 2022 to sound like a very chaos center. So I'm really hoping that we see a big update to a lot of the chaos stuff. I'd love to see them do the supplement treatment to the legions, because I feel like to an extent they're the ones that are going to be, you know, different in how they, than the actual real Space Marines. You got like the Night Lords. Their whole idea is, you know, terror tactics. You have the Iron Warriors that are kind of a siege army, or you've got the Word Bearers, which the Word Bearers would be the one I'd expect to see a lot of things like possessed and things like that. So we're looking at vastly different ways to play. And they're the ones that are all shared in a codex and have been really made vanilla compared to...
Yeah, they got kind of washed together. And a little of the Psychic Awakening stuff, Faith and, I think it was Faith and Fury that had it, added a little bit more to it. So I think at that point, you just, as a Chaos player, you're just so desperate for something. So, but be curious to see. Now, so far, we've seen most of the Psychic Awakening's stuff find their way into a 9th edition codex. So be nice to see that if that continues. But so that was there. One other area of note from previous week, we got a little bit into our tournament talk last week about the team tournament. But one thing we did not talk about at all was the London GT. So almost 600 players descended on London, England for easily what is the largest singles event for 9th edition. And also maybe the shortest finale we've seen so far this season. Ray, I don't know if you've seen any of this, but the guys lined up to, it took about 20 minutes to deploy, and within 20 minutes, the game was over.
I did not.
Yeah, so AdMech player was running three of the bombers and another fighter, basically zoomed across the board, alpha struck his opponent, and his opponent says, that kind of sucks. Handshake, game over. Thank you so much.
Jeez.
Yeah, so there's a couple. Is I was like, wow, it's some people saying, you know, it was a terrain thing, but I'm feeling like there, a lot of other players are it's flyers are flyers. How do they, So I don't know. It's one of those things. What is the role of a flyer in 9th edition? And part of me is like, they seem to be more of a, they have to be a damage dealer because they can't hold objectives. They have no rules anymore in terms of, and they still have a semi-screening effect, which is kind of unintentional. But so yeah, I think if you have the most powerful flyers, you have a viable build, which also brings me to a major, this is a pet peeve of mine I've also noticed in the new releases, which are 40K related, but not specific to the game. I can never get the name right.
Aeronautica? It's
the X-Wing version of for 40K. That's the one. So came out with some new Eldar flyers, and one of them was one of my favorite flyers in the range, which is no longer made by Forge World. So maybe, it's one rumor we've not seen. We've seen quite a few Craft World rumors, and they're actually quite contradictory to each other. But one rumor I've not seen is a plastic Phoenix bomber, and does not seem to fit. Yeah, so if you want to play it in 6mm, go right ahead. Want to play it on 28mm on the tabletop for 40K? Sorry, it's been gone for almost 8 months now, so I'm not sure what's going on. And then 2 years before that, they got rid of the super heavy bombers like the Vampire and stuff like that, which I don't know if I was ever going to buy one of those, but wow, those models were really, really cool. So I don't know if we'll see them in plastic, but right now, if you've got one in resin, hold on to it, because it is a relic.
Are there still rules for it?
It's an excellent question. Yeah, they were in the... Yeah, it's weird. They were in the... I want to say they're in the 9th edition armor compendium. It's a decent flyer. I mean, it's got this weird missile pod, and it's got a whole bunch of pulse lasers on it. So, remember, and it was a little tougher than your average Craft World flyer, so it could take a little more damage, similar to like an Imperial flyer. I was always trying to sneak him into my list somehow, but the whole lack of having the model was a bit of an issue. So
yeah, I don't know. Maybe we'll be lucky. Maybe it's a redesign coming on. There's a lot of talk about Eldar getting revamped too. They're coming to plastic. I know the chances of that are small, but hey, maybe.
Yeah, the prevailing rumor is the Avatar getting larger, basically similar to same size as the Greater Demon, so it's on the same footing. Which I think is interesting, because then does that mean you have to go back and change the Incarn as well? So I'm not sure what that's all about.
I think the Incarn is probably fine. I mean, the model itself isn't that small. It's, roughly Demon Prince size when you take into the...
Yeah.
Yeah, Honestly, that's probably about the size of the cane. I don't expect it to be the size of a bloodthirster.
That's what people are talking about. So I was like, I don't know about that, but it could be. Now, I do have this great piece of artwork that I have from Epic where it shows a avatar and a bloodthirster facing each other in combat. And they're basically the same size, but it's like, oh, that's interesting. So I don't know if that's the case moving forward. Other strange rumors is a new Jetbike Sprue, which isn't that part isn't strange, but supposedly there's going to be a Ranger variant of a Jetbike Rider. So I'm not sure what that's all about. But it's supposed to be a multi-part kit that will give you Wind Riders, Shining Spears, and this new Ranger-style Jetbike, which I'm not sure what that's all about.
It's always hard to tell when you start seeing rumors what's actually going to come and what's just... Sometimes people see
it is.
And they'll go the extra mile to get.
Mm-hmm. Well, back in the day, you brought up some key examples at the Inari Triumvirate. I remember one rumor guy, he got raked over the coals, but realistically, if you had no context and you saw the Triumvirate, you would make the same predictions he did. And he thought, the Vizark was the brand new Vect, and then the Ivrain, I guess I forgot that's her name now. There's a character that follows Eldrad. It's like his second in command. And she's featured prominently in several books. So they thought those two were getting models. And lo and behold, they come out with this whole brand new Incarn and Inari type thing. So you never know. So what people are looking at. Same thing too when the Harlequin jet bike was being seen and rumored about because they didn't have the guy on the back. So they just saw, it's a longer Eldar jet bike. There's a new, variant coming out. And lo and behold, it was for Harlequins. So, but I did mention earlier, it's a nice segue into Harlequins, is that the rumors seem to be contradictory. There's equal number of rumors saying that the Harlequins will be folded into the Craftworld book, as will the Inari. And there's equal number of people saying that's not true at all, that they will still... the Inari may still be around, but the Harlequins will remain having their own codex to stand on, which including supposedly two new units, which I'm like, okay.
Yeah, I'm not ready to believe the whole Harlequins being back into craft codex. We've kind of entered a point where in the lore, they'd kind of work with whoever they wanted to, which kind of works fine with the idea of in-game Eldar Isu, but at this point, I don't see them being added in Codex.
I'm in the other mind. I'm definitely, because that's where Harlequins were before. It was you had a one unit, the troop, and they were in the Dark Eldar Codex, and they were in the Craftworld Codex, and they were just an elite choice, and it was pretty cool.
Well,
I kind of liked it better that way.
What I'm saying is, I wouldn't expect them to put them in the Craftworld Codex and not put them into the Drukharix. Because they work with both.
Mm.
You've got the 9th edition Drukhari Codex. Are there any Harlequins in there?
Unfortunately not.
Is there
Could you imagine? Oh my god.
there's no Inari in there either.
No. Matter of fact, what's weird is they've actually retconned some of the ability to take Inari in the new Drukhari Codex. So it used to be you could splash in Ivrain or Vizark or the Incarn. And actually, back before the Codex, that was a popular build, because really, Drukhari didn't hit that hard. And now, if you include the Inari models, you lose power from pain, which is a major hit. So
yeah, honestly, I think at this point, the Codexes are the Codexes. They're not going to put them together. I do think they need to quit with the whole Inari as a white dwarf kind of insert rule set, and then just make a Inari codex. Take the model, take the data sheets from the codexes that can be Inari, and just put them in a codex. Give them their different keywords, give them the different rules, and doing that will save a lot of issues, because when they're in that codex, they can have different rules compared to their, the data slates in the Drukhari or the Craftworld Codex, because it's a different version of those models. Half the problem that they've been having is, the fact that you're trying to play a different army with rules from different codexes. It's like trying to play a Black Legion army, and you've got the Ultramarines Codex. It's not going to work out right.
Yeah, probably the easiest, or excuse me, the cleanest way is, yeah, just get a Codex. The way you can also change the point values and rebalance them in a, internally, so an RE Dark Reaper might cost differently than a Craft World version. You're absolutely right. I think what you had said a few episodes ago is probably closer what they're going to do, and that is that an RE just shows up in a campaign book as an Army of Renown. That way it lists out, you can pull these units from this codex and these units from this codex and these characters, and you get this ability instead of this ability. So. Right.
Are you a gamer that has more bare plastic than you have time to paint? Do paintbrushes spontaneously combust when you hold them? If either of these is true, contact White Crow Studios and get your models painted by a college-trained professional painter. You can contact Bo at whitecrow.commissions@gmail.com and view his previously painted models at White Crow Studios on Facebook.
Hey listeners, this is Raymond with the Extreme Honest Podcast here to talk to you about KR cases. If you're like me and you're constantly looking for that better way to store your armies, then look no further than KR cases. That's right, this is the foam company known for their soft blue foam in the cardboard cases. They're a great way to mix and match whenever you're heading out for that next tournament. Just swap out those boxes, and no need to worry about switching the foam in and out. They're sturdy. The boxes help protect your models, and when you order, they come fast. The order is right, and for a better price than the other guy. So, go to krcases.com, and when you place your order, be sure to mention the Exterminatus podcast.
So that is all the news we've had quite a bit this week. We had a few tournaments this weekend. So before we head, there was the New Orleans event run by Games Workshop, which did catch some of the streaming, and really good job all around. You know, the technology is definitely getting better. Commentating was really good, and overall, I really enjoyed it. So it's definitely, it's one of the things I kind of wish was on Warhammer Plus, because it's on their, you have to go to their Twitch page to see the replays. But for some reason, the Twitch stream stuff is not on Warhammer Plus.
If they would stick to one match, I think it'd be great to add that on to their portion where it's, you know, just them playing. But they were going back and forth from a lot of different games this week. It's kind of hard to follow along.
Yeah.
I mean, like the first Orlando, there were like rounds they'd go back and forth between two matches. But from what I've heard over the weekend, there were points where they were doing as many like five or six matches in a round that they were jumping back.
I found it pretty easy to follow, actually. I kind of enjoyed the mix it up, because in some games they were kind of in a stalling mode, and other games things were happening, so they were able to go back and forth. And I think did a nice job of bouncing back and forth. I think the hardest part, though, was you had to kind of pay close attention to which table they were back to. Just sometimes either with the table or the terrain or what, I don't know what it was, but every now and then I had to kind of look twice and look at the scoreboard. So, okay, which table are we on? It wasn't like immediately recognizable that, like, oh, we've switched games here. So,
right. And we're talking about, you know, replays. So, if they actually like sat and recorded like individual games, I think it'd be fine. But you know, when I go on to Plus, if I'm gonna watch something, I don't want to watch a bunch of games back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. Two, sure. Mm. But you know, four, five, six. If I can't follow it, I'm not gonna watch that. And jumping back and forth between games makes it kind of hard for themselves.
Anyways, let's take a look at our top finishers. You want to kind of go over the top cut and then our top five. Kind of unlike the London GT, which also baffled me. By the way, that was the other thing I didn't quite understand. With over 500 players, the cut line was only the top four, which I thought was odd. There were some really strong players and strong performances who went 5-1, then finished like 6th, 7th, 8th place, and never had a chance to win the event. I was like, well, that's got to be disappointing.
Well, So my understanding of how they did it was is they did pods after a certain round. What round? But some of the people, I'm sure their scores kind of reflect those. But I couldn't tell you an example because I can't remember which round they actually did it. So. But like you could still win, people might still do really well in those pods, but they're only going to get so, you know, and that person might still end up below someone who did worse than them. But because of the pods, it's like, you know, this pod has X amount of people. So this pod's going to end up being first or whatever. The next one's going to be same, but starting from where the last one left off.
Yeah, I'm not sure how they broke it up either, but it was just interesting this only top four made it. So, but anyway, let's get back to New Orleans. So yeah, great. Commentary again, similar terrain with the clear bases, and trying to see if my local Home Depot is carrying those at this point as I'm working on the terrain project. But so who's our top five from New Orleans?
All right, top five. In fifth place, James Keeling playing Drakari. Fourth, Hunter Gamill playing Death Guard. Third, Mark Perry playing Orcs. Second, Brad Chester playing Drakari. And in first, Richard Siegler playing Cult Mechanicus.
Wow. So Siegler moving away from Tau, which no surprise, to AdMech. But what's interesting is one name you may not have heard in that top five, and that is John Lennon. He actually suffered a surprise. Well, I guess it's a minor upset because Mark Perry is no slouch. Mark Perry was able to take John down in round four, so first game on Saturday. And then that forced John, he ended up running the table after that game, but it was not enough to make the cut. So he was on the outside looking in for the first time in a very long time. So curious, Ray, do you think this is something that Mark Perry just had a better list, or he was actually playing the Orc Buggy list and he was able to put a whole lot of pressure on John's Black Templar, or is this those guys play each other too much in the trap house and they know each other's moves?
Well, what was in John's army?
I'm trying to remember from when I, because I actually watched the game on stream where Mark defeated John. I have to look at it again, but I know it's actually, give me 1 second. Got it. Sorry about that.
All right, so what are we looking at?
All right, I got to scroll down. I'm not used to seeing him this far down. So I'm finishing 17th. So what we're looking at here is Black Templar's list. So interesting. Precursor to the Codex. Let's find out. It's got an Apothecary and a unit of 3 Servitors. And then non-force Orc slot. Chaplain Grimaldus, which every time I see that name, all I can think of is that Chicago pizza place here in Phoenix. So when he's not smiting the enemies of the Empire, he's back here in Phoenix throwing pizza pie. So, High Marshal Helbrecht and a Primaris Chaplain on bike. Troops, he's got a minimum-sized Crusader squad, actually 2-3 of them. 2 units of Blade Guard veterans, a 4-person and a 3-person. A unit of company veterans. It seems like only one or two. A unit of 5 Terminators with Thunderhammer, Storm Shield, and Lightning. 5 of them have the Storm Shields. 4 of them have the Assault Claws. Another unit of Terminators, this time 3 of them with Thunderhammers and Storm Shields. And then a large unit of Vanguard veterans, all with Lightning Claw and Storm Shield. Looks like it'd be about 10 of them. So it's kind of like he took the popular version of the Death Guard, Death Watch, excuse me, list, and made them into Black Templar.
And you said it was a buggy list for the Orcs?
Yep. I will get that to you in a second. This seems to be the new archetype.
Well, if he was using a lot of Perry. What are they called? The scrap jets? Talking about you could have 3 units of at least as many as 3, and those have a whole lot of shots. So he could be
funny you mentioned that, because this is what he's got. They're using freebooters. He's got a big mech with custom force field, unit of 5 burner boys, unit of 5 commandos, and you hit it right on the nose here, Ray. 1, 2, 3 units of scrap jets, 2 units of 2, 1 unit of 1. Plus a shotgun, a shot chuck dragster. He's got 2 of those and a unit of Storm Boys, a minimum squad of 5. And then he's got two flyers. The Wazboom Blaster Jet, he's got two of them, with the Teleporter, Mega Blasters, and Stink Bomb Flinga. And then another detachment of Freebooters featuring Deathkiller Wartrike Gretchen, two units of Burner Boys, and two units of Rocket Truck Squig Buggies, one unit of three, one unit of two.
So
yeah, you called it.
Well, I actually kind of expected more of the Scrap Jets. The Scrap Jets. I mean, we're talking about something, so we're looking at, they got a couple different weapons. So, they got two Twin Big Shooters, which are range 36, DACA 10-6. So, each one of those has two of those. So, we're talking between 12 and 20, strength 5, damage 1. He's hitting enough. Wow,
that'll hurt.
Yeah, we're talking about enough firepower that it basically just counters the whole idea of you having a 2-plus save or a 3-plus. And he's going to get past that just because of the sheer number of how many dice you have to roll. Especially if you're running minimum size squads, it's just going to make it that much easier for him. You know, 2-man squad here, 3-man squad there, 4-man. That's 6, 4 Blade Guard vets are 12 wounds.
Yep.
So if the two Scrap Jets are shooting that and they get in the range where they're hitting at 10s, that's 40 shots, and it's strength 5, so he needs 3s to... Yeah, sure, you've got a 4-plus invuln and a 3-plus save. You're going to fail a third of the time. One-third of 40 is more than 10, so...
So let's break that down for a second. So he said Plague Guard are, what, 3 wounds each, so 9 wounds in that unit?
If we're talking a 3-man unit, yeah.
Yep. So if you figure... Let's say they keep benefiting from the 3-up armor save... So right up there is 27 wounds, and then they're only T4, right, though, right?
Yeah, they're T4.
So the strength 5 shooting is actually wounding them on 3s.
Yep.
So now you're looking at 40 wounds, and orcs generally hit on 5s? Or are they still hitting on 6s at this point?
Ballistic skill 5 plus. 5s,
right? Okay. So it's, yeah, you know, 120 shots to effectively eliminate. And you said they already come with, what, DACA, what, 10?
This is...
And then there's 20, or two of those guns?
Yeah, two, for each model.
Yeah. Okay.
And that...
So, yeah, like you said, you expected more.
Yeah, and then they have another weapon after that. And that's not even the only thing they can shoot with, so...
I have to say, just with that weapon, that's 6 of them will take out the Blade Squad in one turn.
And that's just working off of basic statistics. That's not, you know, hey, I just rolled, you know... All of these are 5 pluses, but these two dice here, which can happen in a dice game. You can end up rolling nothing but 6s at least once. So,
yeah, happens every so well.
Orcs are not an army you want to play MSU style against, especially not the Scrap Jets.
Yeah, I'm just very fearful of them right now. So, all right. So this event actually had several of the top players that we've known to talk about on the show. So a quick rundown, and some of them did appear on stream, so it was kind of cool to finally put a face with a name. So as you mentioned, Ray talked about the top 5, Jack Harpster coming in 6th, Johnny Velasquez coming in 8th, David Villarreal in 9th, Ryan Snyder, who was made a huge splash early in the season, and they seemed to have just kind of lost steam, turns the season around by making a 11th place finish here at the New Orleans event. So really nice to see that. Thomas Reedy, you might remember him by his alter ego Goat Boy. He actually finished 16th, making the top cut. And yeah, that was pretty much it for the big names that were at this particular event. So really excited to see Games Workshop back in the event game. So hope they were successful. And so we'd like to see them again next year when I can actually, might actually attend at this point. Of course, as tradition here on the Exterminatus podcast, we want to salute those who are perfect in their execution. That is perfect in going to the end. And that goes to, unfortunately, Grant Martz playing Death Guard, going perfect 0-4. And winning the Wooden Spoon in New Orleans, which I'm trying to think of. What is a wooden spoon? A New Orleans-style wooden spoon?
A wooden spoon.
Yeah. Other notables at the bottom, I just found Adam Abramovitz with White Scars. End up finishing 163rd with one win. Not quite wooden. It's clearly not wooden spoon material. But I believe we stay in the South for our other big tournament from this past weekend.
Yeah, the South Georgia Havoc GT, which is the South.
It's really cool. Yep. Yes, it is. So tell us, who is our top five in this particular event?
All right, we've got kind of an interesting top five here. I'll start it off. We've got Daniel Hesters playing Yanari.
What?
Yeah.
My goodness. All right.
In fact, he actually won all the way into the last game, which, I'll be honest, I can't tell by looking at what I'm looking at right now, but it might have been against our first person.
It was, actually. It was Seth. Oh, don't want to give it away.
Yeah. Fourth is Nick Moran playing Dark Angels. Third is Jason Jones playing Death Guard. Second, Tarzan playing Orcs. And in first...
Came in from the jungle just for this event.
Yeah, no kidding. first place is Seth Piper playing Grey Knights.
Yeah, taking a look at his list real quick. And indeed, he actually defeated Daniel Hesters. So Daniel, with that one loss, he had a trump. Fell down all the way to fifth place. But the winning Grey Knight list is features a Brotherhood Librarian, Castellan Crow, and Drago. And then he's going more for a Terminator build as opposed to the BB Bjorn build. He's got two units of Terminators in the troop slots. Looks like they're four-man units.
The Terminator should be five-man units.
Two. Right. One, two. You're right. My mistake. So you got the Justicar, the two with the Force Halberds, one with a side cannon, and I didn't notice there's a fifth one at the bottom just with a sword. So I was like, oh, okay. So two units of five, and then one unit of five strike squads. Brotherhood Apothecary, a Purifier squad of five, and the in a Rhino. And then he has a second detachment, also sword bearers, featuring a Grandmaster and the Nemesis Dread Knight, a strike squad, and two more Nemesis Dread Knights in the heavy support slot. So a lot of big, heavy bodies in this particular list. I just got to look at this.
It's pretty surprising to see Grey Knights in first place.
They, you know what? Grey Knights never got their chance. And their Psychic Awakenings book, their upgrades in there were terrifying. Unfortunately, it came out like right at the beginning of COVID. So no one ever got to see them in tournament play. So now that they're in ninth edition, you heard it last week. A lot of players kind of underestimating Grey Knights, and Steve Riley from our team did very well with Grey Knights at the tournament. And listening to a few other podcasts that were covering their team's progress through the team challenge is, yeah, a lot of people kind of second-guessed Grey Knights as being a power. And being one of the true, between them and Thousand Suns, we got that true mortal wound output machines now. So
yeah, and I think one of the things that people make a big mistake on is they look at Grey Knights and they just look at a psychic army. And the truth is as far as Space Marine armies go, Grey Knights are actually fairly good at close combat because unlike most Space Marines that, you know, if you've got a bolt gun and you're not, or I should say a bolt rifle at this point because most people play a lot of Primaris, they don't have like chain swords or close combat weapons. They're just kind of hitting with, you know, fists. Whereas the Grey Knights are all running around with special weapons. They're not just strength 4, you know, AP 0 or AP minus 1 sometimes, and 1 damage. We're talking right. Stuff that's got AP, it's got multiple damage. So they're actually a bit of a melee powerhouse, and people kind of forget that.
Yeah, and you also got the all-know hammer hand.
Yeah.
So you can all get rerolls the wound, and they're a lot more mobile. You know, they with all their teleportation tricks, so they can get on those objectives and, like you said, use that close combat prowess and stay on those objectives. Yep. So,
and they're one of the few Space Marine chapters who have troops, have Terminator troops, so they can be objective secure.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy. All right, do you want to see what a top five Inari list looks like?
Sure.
All right. So the first one is indeed an Inari. Detachment, in this case, is a battalion of Harlequins featuring the Incarn Ivrain, three units of five players, each armed with a fusion pistol, and each unit has, well, the first one has five caresses, the second one has four caresses and a blade, as does the third one, and three Star Weavers, so cart them around. Then the second patrol is a Craft World Inari list. So featuring Farseer Skyrunner and the Vizark, unit of 5 Rangers, 3 Hornets, so get your Forge World book out now, unit of 5 Dark Reapers with the Reaper Exarch taking a Reaper Launcher with a Crack Shot. A Warp Hunter is added on there as well. So you got 1, 2, 3, at least 4 Forge World models in this list. The Hornets, by the way, Crystal Targeting Matrix and 2 Hornet Pulse Lasers, as well as Spirit Stones. So it has a Feel No Pain, and I believe Crystal Targeting Matrix is they can advance and shoot without penalty as long as they shoot the closest model. And don't remember the stat line from a Pulse Laser, but I'm pretty sure it's high strength and damage 3, because I remember that being like the only choice that you would want to take on that vehicle. And the Warp Hunter is also interesting. That gives you a little bit of indirect fire. That's pretty nice. And a flamethrower option. So very similar to Sean Naden's list that he ran just about a month ago. So with Harlequins and Dark Reapers for support in the back. All right. Any other events this particular weekend?
Those are the ones that I got.
All right. So as I mentioned, let's take a look at your ITC top 5. See how these members all shook down with all this week's events. One thing while I'm pulling up these stats, a lot of the regional events, which are a big hit so far for the 2021 season, and the Lord Marshal series, which is the big one in the Midwest, had an interesting conclusion. Spoiler alert, Matt Root won the event, and he actually won the event without even attending the final event, the Iron Halo GT. He had that much of a lead from his earlier winnings in the season that he decided, you know what, I'm going to go fishing instead. You guys have a fun time at the tournament. And by sitting out, he still won the tournament. Still won the League Cup. But the following are fishing for a top spot in the ITC. So your top 10 looks something like this. 10th place, Nick Nativati, who spent the weekend commentating at the New Orleans Open. 9th place, Mark Hurdle. 8th place, James Keeling, who was at the event. 7th place, Benny Chima, who was a top 4 finisher in the London GT last weekend. Ben Cherwin coming in 6th. Colin McDade, friend of the show, at 5th. Sean Naden in 4th. Trying to claw his way back up to the top spot. 3rd place, Jack Harpster, who we just talked about, was at this particular event as well. 2nd place, Brad Chester, who had another great showing at the New Orleans Open, coming in 2nd. But in 1st place, despite the stumble there in the 4th round, John Lennon retains the top spot with about a 27-point lead over Brad Chester. So there you have it. Ray, any other parting thoughts before we conclude this week?
As we reach towards the, what I call Holiday Alley, you know, we've got the Thanksgiving and Christmas and all that stuff coming up. We are going to start seeing a bit of a slowdown on how many tournaments there are. So if you want to get more ITC points or get better ITC scores, now's the time to look into tournaments. But remember to be safe.
Speaking of being safe, the Akatil Onslaught, November 6th and 7th, that might be one of your last chances to get points before the holidays. Tickets are still available, and it's also a great opportunity to meet Ray and I in person. And the venue has just opened up some more space for us at this point, so be plenty of additional tickets. So we have now easily enough space to crack the major levels. But a lot of guys you've clicked yes, I'm going on the Facebook page. Matter of fact, we have over 79 players saying that they're going. But we need those ticket sales. And in order to secure that new open spot, we need those tickets purchased before October 15th. So you've got about 2 weeks from the time of this recording to click the buy button to make sure that you're coming to the event. Otherwise, I'll have to forfeit the expanded area. We'll still have plenty of room to run the event at a GT level, but to make it to a major level, if you were interested in coming, click those buy tickets options through BCP app. So appreciate your help on that. I have been furiously making all kinds of new terrain, tried a few new techniques, and they're working out really well. I'm really excited. I might actually do a few videos to throw up onto the Exterminatus Facebook page so you can see how I did it. So I'm pretty excited. So I can't wait to show off the new terrain at our event.
It might be worth talking on one of the next couple episodes about the tournament itself.
Yep, probably touch on that probably not next week because it's our big 200th anniversary, but probably episode 201. We'll have a firmer game plan of, we've been doing a lot of playtesting behind the scenes on a couple new ideas on how to run the tournament. And I'd like to share what we've come up with so far and how this will play out on the tabletop. So that's a pretty good idea, right? So in the meantime, we hope, Jim, I hope you're feeling better and love to talk to you next week. In the meantime, my name's Eric.
I'm Raymond.
And thank you for listening to the Exterminatus Podcast.